This is Amanda.
And Bryce.
And I wanted to talk to you for a minute, okay? Like, before we talk to you for a bunch of minutes, I just wanted to, you know, pull y'all aside and tell y'all. Y'all know I'm pretty open and honest about my medical adventures, my health journey. And so all of you know, for the past couple months now, I have an infection that I just cannot get rid of. This past weekend, it kind of came to a head. I got incredibly sick. I could not eat or drink. I lost a very unhealthy amount of weight. Missed 2 days of work. Scared the crap out of my husband. Point is, I'm doing much better, but I will have a lot of doctor's visits until I can get a handle on my situation. So I need to take a little step back for my health, both mental and physical.
In addition to Amanda's stuff, I also need to take a step back so I can focus on my children through the holidays and learning to balance babies, work, and the podcast a little bit better before we continue forward. So with that being said, what we're trying to say is we're taking a break. Now, we've already talked about our return date. We will be returning to Hell on Heels podcast or regular broadcasting on or during the week of January 5th. So we already have our plan. We are taking 8 weeks for us to collect ourselves, figure everything out that we need to, and then we will be back at it and ready to go.
So until then, y'all can listen to the old episodes if you want. They're still going to be there.
Look, there's over 100 episodes. So
yeah,
157 episodes will be released before our break. Just kidding, 156 episodes. So y'all can calm down and listen to all of those again. Dad, yeah. It's talking to you.
Mark, talking to you.
Brittany, talking to you.
You, talking to you. You out there?
Fred, Frank, Sarah, Clara, Jim, Bob, whatever your name is, we're talking to you.
Yeah. We'll be back. It's cool.
So until episode 158, enjoy all of our old episodes and enjoy the upcoming episode that we're interrupting this for.
Yeah.
This podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell on Heels podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And hello. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you and both children in your lap at the same time?
Oh, if you guys can't tell, it's as Amanda gave it away, I've got two babies on me. Mm-hmm. This is the quietest it's been all afternoon.
I knocked on my desk for you.
I'll do it too. Don't worry. It may not last long. I don't know. Amanda's witnessed a couple meltdowns already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all from Leo. Not Leo. I'm sorry. All from JJ. Leo's being a saint.
Yeah, Leo's being really good, and JJ is really going after Leo's hair. Like, he's really upset that he has none, and Leo has so much. There he goes again.
And Leo is now getting frustrated about the hair situation. Because it's not his fault. He just knows he's so handsome and has the fullest head of hair in this house, aside from me.
Every time I make faces at him, he just looks away disinterested.
I don't think it's you. I think it's a hard for him to see the screen.
Oh, okay.
I'm pushed back a little bit, and it's not full screen.
Oh, okay.
So,
plus so it's there's not a his light. Fault. Baby eyes.
No. Yeah, baby eyes. That's probably why JJ is so focused on the hair, is because it's like inches from his face right now.
He can actually see it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still fixated on it. I'm sorry, they're cracking me up.
They are, boy, they're warm. Let me just tell you, they are some warm babies. Don't. Anyways, I do also have some news.
Uh-huh.
We are apparently shellfish again. Apparently talking about babies is making us selfish. And so instead of us talking about babies, mm-hmm. I've got a story about Millie.
Okay.
First of all, she does not want this story shared. So, of course, I'm going to share the story. So, my dad's telling me First of all, let me explain how this story even came to be a like part of my brain is because I was up there for because my mom watches the boys on Fridays.
Okay.
And so I'm up there and I just have dinner up there because I'm already there.
Yeah.
And Mill comes in and she tells me, you guys are shellfish. All you do is talk about babies and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have any stories to tell about you. And she's like, well, I'm not going to give you any or something to that effect. And so I was like, Dad, I don't know what story. And Mill's like, don't tell her that one. Don't tell her. My dad,
which is all he needed to hear.
Yeah. Well, then my dad starts telling a story and she's like, oh, okay. That's not the one I was thinking. And then my dad gets her to whisper the story to him. Millie. Under the guise that he wasn't going to tell me. And I said, Dad had crossies the whole time. I saw. He didn't have crossies, by the way. But he tells me Millie was flirting.
Shut the front door.
It was Halloween. There were some teenage boys that were, I don't know if they were blocking the candy or hoarding the candy, whatever it was. But she was flirting with them.
Was Hold she on. Flirting no. for candy? Because that will, I'll allow it.
I mean, yes.
Okay. But was she flirting for candy or was she flirting for romance? Romance, unacceptable. Candy?
Romance, absolutely acceptable. Unacceptable. Here's the thing. My mom brought up a very good point because Mill says she wasn't flirting. She just wanted candy. My mom brought up a good point because my mom was like, well, were they short? Were they short kings? They weren't short kings. So in Mill's defense, she may not have been flirting. We know she likes the shorties.
So what is flirting? Is it like regular people flirting or is it my flirting where you just insult them?
It's a 12-year-old flirting or almost 12-year-old flirting.
What does that mean?
Have you ever seen like a 12-year-old that, let's see. So how it was explained is that the boys were kind of taunting her with the candy and mm-hmm. she was just kind of taunting them back,
mm-hmm.
but it was, my dad says it was flirting. I think it was probably flirting. But I don't think Mill knows that it was flirting.
If she doesn't know she was flirting, I think that's even better. Lead them on, girl. Lead them on. Get your candy. Get out of there. Leave them guessing.
Right, right. So mm-hmm. She's going to deny that she was flirting. She was flirting. JJ does not like that his Aunt Mimi was flirting. He would, of course, start screaming. He's only doing it because he's like, Mimi was flirty. Mimi was flirty.
He knows it's against the rules.
He knows. He knows, Nelster. And he doesn't like it.
You have to set a good example.
And you're just not.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't stop. I'm going to get a good arm workout today. This is why I'm okay canceling that gym membership. Anyways, so in case anyone was wondering, Mimi is a flirt. Aunt Mimi is a flirt. And she denies it. She just denies it. Though again, it wasn't short kings, so there's always the possibility she was not intending to flirt with them.
I will allow it to be a Halloween trick. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. It was a Halloween trick to get the Halloween treat.
I mean, she's gonna appreciate that you're on her side.
Well, it might would happen more if you quit calling me a shellfish.
Well, it would happen more if she would tell me more stories in her perspective versus my dad having to tell me all the stories. You know?
Wait, didn't we just talk about your dad?
Yeah, we did actually.
Oh, okay. Well,
because he gets locked in lots of bathrooms.
So how was your Halloween? What were the boys?
The boys were skeletons.
I saw the picture and I loved it.
They were skeletons, huh? You guys were ooky spooky. You know what, though, I'm really upset about?
What?
So I was planning to keep just a couple, like, outfits from, because they're outgrowing the 0 to 3 months. They're into 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
They're going on to size 2 diapers, which for anyone out there that's listening and being like, they're 5 months old. Are you insane? They're only in size 2. They're third percentile babies. Leave them alone. Okay. They were premature. They're tiny still.
Yeah. They're but working on it.
We're working on our ounce a day. Okay. Anyways, I like to keep like a couple of the outfits from each size. So I kept like their, I kept their very first outfits ever from their preemie size, and then a couple from the newborn. And I was going to keep the Halloween outfit.
Did they destroy them?
They didn't destroy them.
Did the dogs?
Maisie tore them up.
Oh.
Both of them.
For why?
I assume, so she had to have pulled them out of dirty clothes, and I assume they had spit up on them.
Or, yeah, I was going to say or formula, but what's the difference, really?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. So, I found those, and I was livid. Oh my, I saw red. Cody had to yell at her. I was like, she's going to be on the streets. I can't do it. She's going to be on the streets. but yeah, so they were oogie spooky skeletons. What were your children? I mean, I know what they were, but tell the listeners.
So Lee was Spider-Man, and he actually kept like his little hat on, and like the hat had the eyes, because obviously my almost 1-year-old is not going to wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So he was Spider-Man, and Annie was Ghost Spider.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they were, she's obsessed with Ghost Spider. Lee turns 1 in 2 days. Good God. He turns 1 in 2 days, and then Annie turns 1 on the 17th, and her birthday party.
She turns 1 on the 17th?
Yeah, she's going backwards.
Okay.
My bad. She turns 3 on the 17th. It's too many kids, too many birthdays. Good God. And they have them every year. Did you know that?
Birthdays come every year for kids? I thought it was just like once.
Oh, it's stressful.
Can you cut birthdays off when they turn 18?
I think you can.
Okay, done.
Yeah. Now it's your problem.
Because this child right here is trying to break my thumb. So I think he might actually have birthdays cut off at 17 due to injuries.
He's aggressive. Tonight, specifically. I told you.
He's being a little demanding of my thumb. I don't know what he wants me to do, but it does actually kind of hurt the way he's pulling on it. But he's not crying, so it's hard for me to be like, stop it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just wiggle another finger. Distract.
The issue is the other fingers are under his butt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, don't
wiggle. That's why it hurts. How he's pulling it. All right. Anyways, how are you? So, C. diff free. Wait, did you say that on the recording, or is that something that you...
No, you said that on the recording.
Okay. I'm sorry. How are you, Amanda? I couldn't remember if you told me before we started recording or if you said it after we started recording.
I don't remember either, but I think.
Okay.
Rewind. I think I said it before. Yeah.
Okay. Rewind. Amanda, how are you?
Oh, okay. So great news. No one's heard it yet. I'm C. diff free, which is like good and bad because now we're trying to figure out if I'm C. diff free, what's happening. But yeah, that's where we're at. I got the good news today from my doctor. I had an appointment with him. He walked in. He's like, hey, it's good to see you in the flesh. And I'm like, I know. I talk to you like all the time, but it's always like over the phone. So yeah.
I don't know why. I hate when people say good to see you in the flesh.
As opposed to what? Muscle good and bone? Good to
see you in person?
Oh, gross. If I could do every single doctor visit telehealth and just mail my poop, I would do that.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. The term, like, good to see you in the flesh.
Oh, I'm saying if I didn't have to see you, like, Walmart checkout, but the doctor's office, that would be wonderful.
Oh, yeah. No, like scan and go at Sam's Club.
Oh, yeah. Look, I will take my own blood and live it and give it to you.
Yeah.
Just,
you know, what's even better is pick up at any grocery store.
Just come out to my car, take my blood, and let me go.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
How do we make that happen? How do we make that a thing? I'm going to suggest it next time I go.
Okay. Do it and tell me how that goes.
Okay.
So C. diff free. I didn't break the news to anyone.
Yes, C. diff free. We're still trying to get a handle on the situation, but that's a start. And it's for the start. Record, I am never taking clindamycin again, ever. Give me anything else. I don't know how medicines work, but I know like taking clindamycin makes you like more susceptible to get C. diff. Yeah, I don't care how many sinus infections I get. I'll suffer. I will drown in my snot before I take that.
You'll start doing. Have you seen? Okay, it's on TikTok. But there's like a sinus rinse machine. You put it in both of your nostrils and press play and it shoots water up your nose.
Bryce, I'm trying to eat. I hate. Like, it's not that it like disgusts me. But when I still lived in Alabama, my sinuses were so bad that I had to do a sinus rinse every night. And I hate it with a fiery passion.
I guess I brought it up to say that could help with your sinus infections if you get them. Maybe.
If it is sinus rinse versus clindamycin, I will do the sinus rinse.
Okay.
That's how bad I don't want C. diff again.
I mean, I don't blame you.
And E. coli, but I don't know where that comes from. So probably produce or something. I don't know. So yeah, I got good news. And still trying to figure out the rest of the news. So I also got my first dose of the allergy medicine, the allergy shots.
Okay.
I got my first dose. So about how many, you know what? I didn't do this math. How many months are in a year? 52?
How many months? 12.
I'm sorry.
But if you're looking for weeks, it is Jesus. 52.
Thank you. Yes. I'm okay, guys. I'm getting better.
I don't know about that, but there's... In Amanda's year, there's a lot of months. I don't never like a year. It this just is never ending.
This is like a Jupiter year. I don't know. Yes. So first shot down, 155 to go.
155? How often do you have to do that shot?
Once a week for 3 years.
You sound really, really, really excited to do it.
See, the thing is, I have a lot of commitments, and I did not realize the commitment that I was committing to when I committed to it, and now I'm committed. Because
do you have to go in to do the shot, or can you do it at home?
Nope. I got to go in, and I get a shot in the back of each arm. So technically, it's two shots. And if I miss a week, not even a week, if they're like closed or something on a Monday... And I miss that Monday, I have to start all over again and take that shot again. That
sounds horrible. So are you scheduled for like Tuesdays and Tuesdays or Wednesdays?
I can go. They are open Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and I can go any of those days. That's their shot days.
Okay. Well, I ask because Mondays you have a higher likelihood of having a holiday. Same goes for like a Friday. Because, like, you have, like, Black Friday and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So that's why I was thinking Tuesday, Wednesdays, you're less likely. But what happens if it is on a holiday?
I'm glad you asked. I also asked, if it's on a holiday, like Monday, for example, is Veterans Day. That's a holiday. I don't know if they're closed. I know I'm off from the bank, so I assume the doctor's going to be closed.
Most doctor's offices don't do. So far, they haven't. Acknowledge Veterans Day as a
as an official. Banks,
here's the thing: is banks have so many holidays off.
Yeah, it's kind of great, guys. Yeah. Work at a bank.
Yeah.
But yeah, in that instance, I would have to get the shot Monday, and then Thursday that same week.
Yeah. So okay, so you're closed on the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
That's the day you're supposed to get it done. How are you supposed to go on Monday?
I don't. I go Thursday. I go tomorrow. Because I went Monday this week. Tomorrow's Wednesday.
So prior. So it's right. The week prior. Okay.
Yeah. Which kind of confuses me for the next week too. But I guess it would just be like, okay. So I get a shot Monday. Mm-hmm. Which honestly, that's not horrible because then I'm just like knocking these weeks out.
God, maybe you just start doing it like that all the time.
I'll do it. I'll do two shots a week if I can only do it for like 2 years or a year and a half. Like, sign me up.
Yeah.
But once I get like really far into it and there's like more and more allergens in the vials, then they move it to every 2 weeks that I'll get the shot. But that's like,
that's way out there.
Way at least 2 years out. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, now that I have one less screaming child, are you ready to hear the rest of the story?
Please tell me the rest of the brain.
Okay, first of all, I do want to say that I did cover most of Arnold Rothstein already, but this is a scandal he's believed to have been involved in, but it has never been proven that he has any involvement. So I just want to make it very clear. This is
Alleged
that he's involved, but I'm actually going to focus more on the people that we can confirm were involved.
Okay.
So I'm realizing I didn't actually pull pictures. That's okay. Let me do that right now.
Really excited for this because I was wondering, like, with last episode, I knew it was a two-parter and you just kept going and you kept telling us more and more and more about the brain. And so I'm like, how is this a two-parter if she has already told me everything?
Well, because I haven't told you everything.
Oh, that's right. You skipped a piece.
Yeah. So for those of you that Googled, you already know what piece I skipped. For those of you that did not Google, we are going to be talking about the Black Sox scandal.
Oh.
Do you know what the scandal is?
Well, I'm guessing it has nothing to do with putting a black sock in a load of whites.
Exactly what it has to do with. You guessed it. Done. Oh, story's his laundry. Over.
He screwed up his laundry. Everything's gray now. Okay. No. Sorry, no, guys. No. Bryce told you I didn't have C. diff anymore, so now we're even.
I didn't mean to. I thought you had already said something. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm just teasing.
So we talked about Arnold Rothstein. We love him. The scandal I didn't mention is, do you know Major League Baseball?
I know some.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I know the White Sox. I know the Red Sox. Is there not a Red Sox?
I think there is, but I don't know if they're called the Red Sox.
Isn't that Boston?
Are they the Red Sox?
Aren't they? Am I tripping?
I might be wrong. Boston.
My Red? Child tells me I'm tripping all the time. So I
no, they are the Red wrong. Sox. I thought they were something else.
Okay, so we've got more than one sock.
Well, okay. I'm glad you brought up the Chicago White Sox is because the scandal involves them.
Oh, okay.
So the Black Sox scandal. I want to again put out there, I know this was a two-parter. I focused on Arnold Rothstein the first time. He's not mentioned much this time because I'm focusing more on the players that we can confirm.
Okay.
And also there's not like, look, here's the thing. There's evidence to prove that Arnold Rothstein was involved, but there's also evidence to prove he wasn't involved.
And we already know who we're dealing with. So
it's the brain. So obviously, let's just dive in. So Charles Albert Comiskey. He was born on August 15th, 1859, and he was known as Commie or the Old Roman. From what I could see, he had a pretty good early life. His father was John Comiskey, who was an Illinois politician. So, like, pretty good standing.
Okay.
He does develop an interest in baseball fairly young. So, he played in college for St. Mary College. He would go on to play for several professional teams in Chicago. His professional career begins with him as a pitcher, and it begins in 1882 with the St. Louis Brown Stockings. He would actually manage the team.
I'm sorry.
Is it the Stockings?
Okay. Okay, like, first of all, baseball teams, they have some wild what, mascots, I guess. But why all the foot clothing? Why do we have so many socks? Now we have stockings. Are there shoes somewhere?
I don't know.
Okay.
But we'll talk more about some stockings, okay?
Okay.
So he's playing for the Brown Stockings, but at the time, he actually managed the team during part of its very first season and his first season. So, like, he's doing a lot.
That and feels like something.
Yeah. And he fully takes over management for this team in 1885. So he was, like, helping from 1882 through 1884. And then in 85, he's like, I'll just manage it. And then
he's still playing?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he actually leads the Browns to four consecutive American Association championships. And they were close. They were a very close second in 1889. So he's 1885 through 1888, 85, 6, 7, 8. They win first place. And then in 89, they're very close. Okay. He, at some point in his career, though, and it's unclear when, but he does move to be a first baseman after issues with his arm. So he goes from pitcher to first baseman. And then in 1890, he would play in a manage the Chicago Pirates. From what I could find, they were only like 1 year and then they were no longer a team. So he returns back to the Browns, to the Brown Stockings in 1891. Then the Cincinnati Reds, or then he goes to the Cincinnati Reds in the National League from 1892 to 1894. So essentially, he played professionally from 1882 to 1894, and that's 12 years.
Okay. That's like a career.
Yeah. So here are some of his stats. His batting average was .264. From what I could find today, the average of .300 or higher is considered to be excellent. So for him to be .264, he was doing pretty damn good on his batting average.
Sounds like it. I mean, I know nothing about averages or batting, but that sounds better than I could do for sure.
Yeah. He had 29 home runs. He had 883 RBIs or runs batted in. Okay. And he had 419 stolen bases.
All of those stats, it's so crazy to say, all of those stats are exactly that amount more than what I have.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for 12 years, I mean, I'm not an expert, but that does seem pretty dang good.
Yeah. The runs batted in is like over 400, you said?
Runs batted in is 883.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So more than 400.
Yeah. The 400 number is how many stolen bases he had.
Where do you think he kept them? You think he just got them in his garage?
They're stacked in a closet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got them like right next to his trophy cabinet. He's like, these are all the medals I've won and these are all my stolen bases. And he opens the closet and they just all topple out.
Probably. I can only imagine that's what happens.
Okay.
So Charles, you know, he did pretty well on his team. He was, you know, part of a whole community. And he would actually go on to purchase his very first team, the Cornhuskers in Iowa.
Because what other name would you give to someone in Iowa?
Well, I mean, I can tell you right now, he purchased the Cornhuskers. He does not continue to own the Cornhuskers because he moves them almost immediately to St. Paul, Minnesota, and renames them the St. Paul Saints.
Okay. I don't quite understand how you can just like, so he bought a baseball team and then he was like, all of you now move to St. Paul. We're going to Minnesota. And they were all just like, yep. That's just a wild concept to me. I know it happens all the time.
Hey, that just happened with a hockey team. Someone in Utah, I can't remember. It's a rich person in Utah. I can't remember his name, of course, right now. He bought a hockey team and moved them from Arizona to Utah.
Those poor hockey players. That feels like a wild, that's like moving someone from Alabama to New York.
Really? Maybe temperature wise.
Well, yeah, that's what I.
Oh, okay.
From the desert to the mountain.
I mean, technically we're a desert too. So
Not by the pictures you send me. That's all mountain.
I'm just saying Utah has a lot of desert places. Mm-hmm. Where they are, I'm going to tell you right now, is not really desert. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about. So he moves them. And he's like, okay, I know you guys are in Iowa, but we're going to Minnesota. And he actually was not the only baseball team. They shared the city with a different team. And he kind of got sick of sharing St. Paul with this other team. So he just kind of eventually makes an arrangement to share a different city. And he decides he wants to share the city of Chicago. So they move the team again. And he renames the team again. So it's now the White Stockings, which is later shortened to the White Sox.
Shouldn't it be the White Stocks?
No.
Oh.
They just got sick of all the extra letters.
And they got sick of moving those letters every time they had to go to another state. Yeah. So they just left them.
Yeah, exactly. So the other team that still exists, it is now known as the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs was actually originally named the White Stockings. So Charles isn't really original.
Wait, so there was two White Stockings?
So they, by the time that he moved the team to Chicago, they had already renamed. I don't know what the Chicago Cubs had renamed to, but they were no longer the White Stockings. So he comes in and he's like, well, we'll just be the White Stockings.
Kind of smart, though, because he was like, all of that White Stockings merch, I'm going to buy it. But it, like, not at a premium cost. Because all your stuff's used. It's a good business idea. I guess
marketing. People are like, yeah, we know the White Stocking.
Yeah. What? I grew up watching them. I'm going to take my boy, my grand boy. I don't know.
My grand boy. So, you know, he moves them over. And Charles, maybe it seems like he would understand his players, like how much hard work they put into sport. And, you know, maybe he would line their pockets pretty nicely because he used to be a player, knows what it's like. No,
maybe
he does not. Charles is pretty resented by his players. He was considered a very frugal man. It was said that he severely underpaid his players, even to the point that he made them pay to have their uniforms laundered. And when they didn't pay and they just kind of had dirty uniforms, he finally laundered them, but then like docked their pay for the cost of laundering. That's the rumor.
Okay. He kind of sucks. That's the rumor.
I will say in his defense, he's not the only one. It's not like there's other teams that are like, oh, we get paid 10 times more than you guys. It was kind of the industry standard. And he was just kind of going with it, you know? Anyways.
Yes.
Yeah. So his players, in 1917, they won the World Series.
Oh, and okay.
The White Sox are one of the top teams in the league. But some of the players only made about $3,000 a year. That is $52,000 today. That was like Swede Risberg, Lefty Williams. Some made more, like $6,000 a year, which is about $105,000 today. So that was like Joe Jackson, Buck Weaver, those type of players.
Okay.
There's one player, Eddie. I didn't double check how to say his last name. Cicotte? I don't know if I said that right. Sorry, it's Cicotte. But Eddie, he was promised a $10,000 bonus if he won 30 games in one season. That's equivalent to $175,000 today. And this was for the 1919 season. Now, Eddie, he was getting close to that 30-game win for the season. Mm-hmm. And just as he was getting close, he's benched. Making him unable to win the 30 games in one season.
That's so basically low down.
Yeah. So Charles basically has him benched, and he claimed that the benching was because they had to protect their star pitcher from any arm injuries because they were headed for the World Series. And he would end the 1919 season with a 29-7 record. Dangling that carrot.
I would riot.
Yeah. Now, you might wonder, like, why are the players accepting, like, why are they just putting up with this treatment? At the time, there was a reserve clause they didn't have any free agency when it came to the sport and contracts. So basically, this reserve clause meant that any player that refused a contract was just prohibited from playing with any other professional team.
Oh, wow. So it made the owners of these teams, it made these people easier to take advantage of.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So anyways, so at that time, in addition, players couldn't just change teams. They couldn't be, you know, just, hey, I want to go play for the Red Sox now. No. They essentially had to get permission from their current team. They had to go ask mommy and daddy if they could change different teams. And they just didn't have any bargaining power. They didn't. Now, the reserve clause, it was abolished in baseball in 1975. Okay, so there is now free agency within baseball.
But that's a long time after this, right?
Yeah, 1919. Because this is 1919, guys. So in 1919, any players that needed extra cash, some of them were just not below finding different ways to earn that extra cash, even if it meant mingling with some gamblers.
Ooh.
We'll talk more about what some people did. So, you know, a lot of them were like, oh no, we're fine with going gambling. But then you have other players that aren't. And you have in the White Sox clubhouse, it was divided into two groups. You have the one goody goody two shoes straight laced players. They're known as the Clean Sox. And this group includes people like Eddie Collins, Ray Schalk, Dickie Kerr, players like that. And then you have this other group that didn't necessarily have a name, but they're the ones more willing to go to the gamblers, more willing to maybe get a little nitty gritty dirty. And they really resented the Clean Sox group. They like the Clean Sox and this other group were like, absolutely not. We do not commingle.
So you had the Clean Sox and then you had the Unlaundered.
Yes.
Okay.
So the Unlaundered were like, absolutely not. We are not doing this. But one thing these two groups did have in common was that they all resented Charles Comiskey, the owner of the team. So on September 18th, 1919, Chick Gandil, he does become the ringleader for the players in this scheme. Now, Charles Arnold Chick Gandil, he was born on January 19th, 1888. He was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. His parents were actually Swiss immigrants. He was also an only child. His family moved around a little bit. They were in Washington, and then they settled in California, and he takes an interest in baseball. He plays baseball at home, but he would end up leaving home to take on his career, and he starts on his own in Texas, then goes to Arizona, then Mexico, and then in 1908, he finally has a chance to play professional baseball. Like, at this point, when he's in Arizona, Texas, and Mexico, he's playing maybe semi-pro, but he's not playing pro. So, 1908, he almost makes it to professional baseball, to major league. He is picked up with a Louisiana team. So, he's drafted by the St. Louis Browns, but then he would fail to make the club, and he has to go back to Louisiana. No, I'm sorry. I don't know what's happening. So my notes are confusing me because there's a lot of L's right there. So he's playing semi-pro. He is picked up with a Louisiana team. So he is playing with this team in Louisiana. And then he is drafted by the St. Louis Browns. But he fails to make the St. Louis Browns. And so he's told, go back to Louisiana. Go back to that team. Mm-hmm. And he says, absolutely not. You don't tell me what to do.
I love him.
So instead, him and his wife, they go to California, and he actually joins a Fresno team. And then he gets in trouble because he's like, you're facing being blacklisted for not listening to us. And so he kind of starts cooperating, and he joins the Pacific Coast League for the 1909 season. And then he's arrested for theft. He steals like $225 from the team's coffers. Like, a lot of stuff is going on. It doesn't stop him. His arrest doesn't stop him because he's then picked up by the White Sox because his stats were still so good. Like, his stats were excellent. Now, he's picked up by the White Sox or I guess it's always described as being sold to the White Sox in 1909. So he was actually required to report to the White Sox in 1910. So officially he makes it to Major League Professional Baseball in 1910. And while his stats were really impressive before he went to the White Sox, his first year, not good.
Oh.
His first year, he batted an average of .193.
That feels
pretty low. And he was batting an average of .225. I didn't write it down. I'm sorry. But his average was pretty high. So he like
tanked.
He tanked. So he sold to a Montreal team. So in Montreal, though, the season he plays for them, he does excellent. His batting average goes from that .193 to .304.
I love this guy.
He's just all over the place.
What are you doing, bud? Is it the altitude? What's going on?
I don't know. So now people are seeing him again, and he returns to Montreal for a second season. He is sold mid-season, though, to the Washington Senators. It's not Centaurs. It's Senators, okay?
That's hilarious. The Washington Senators?
S-E-N-A-T-O-R-S. Senators, Dad.
I can't deal with baseball. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he is sold to the Senators. And his batting average this time remains high. It's actually .305. Like, he goes up a little on his batting average. And he plays with the Senators until 1915. And then he goes and plays for the Cleveland Indians in 1916. And in 1916, he was described as a very likable guy. The Cleveland newspaper actually described him as, quote, a most likable player and one of excellent habits.
Oh, okay.
So, like, he's a good guy. In 1917, he is then reacquired by the White Sox. They see him. They're like, all right, we might have had a rough moment, but you're doing great now. So he ends up going back to the White Sox. And that was the season that Chicago White Sox would defeat the New York Giants in the World Series. So the year he joined them was 1917, and they won the World Series. Okay. So just throwing it out there.
Whatever luck he had. It seemed to turn around that first year when he kind of.
So them winning the 1917 season World Series, there were rumors of a scandal that year. Some people believed that Chick Gandil actually collected $45 from each team member and paid off the Detroit Tigers. And they had four games against the Detroit Tigers. And basically the Tigers would take it easy on them and would lose. This was investigated, but it wasn't investigated until 1927, and there was no action ever taken. So, I'm just saying some people believe there was. Other people, like myself, I like to believe that he was straight-laced in 1917.
I mean, if nothing ever happened, then...
I mean, it was 10 years later, so maybe there was just no evidence.
Then it never happened.
It never happened.
Yeah.
So, we're going to go ahead and go back to September 18th, 1919. So Chick Gandil, he's becoming the ringleader. It is said that he meets with Joe Sport Sullivan, who is a gambler. These two had known each other prior to this. So they met during Chick's first year playing for the Washington Senators. So Joe, he's a Boston bookmaker. He's a bookie. Joe and Chick, they meet at this hotel, Buckminster, near Fenway Park, and they talk about some plans, and specifically plans to throw the World Series with the Cincinnati Reds for the low, low price of $80,000 to $100,000. I had conflicting sources on that one.
Is that for, hold on, $80,000 to $100,000, is that for the team?
Yes.
Not horrible.
Not bad for the time.
No.
So,
especially on top of what they're already making, that's like.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. He's got to get people to buy in on it. And you got the clean socks and the unlaundered socks.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, we'll talk about that. But September 20th, so just 2 days later, some sources said September 21st. It doesn't matter. Just a couple days later, there's a meeting of the White Sox players that takes place in Gandil's room at the Ansonia Hotel in New York. So they talk about the scandal and basically throwing the game. And this is what was said about it. This is from Chick Gandil. I had only social contacts with gamblers until that September day in 1919, when Sullivan walked up to Eddie Cercote and me as we left our hotel in Boston. As I recall, we were four games in front the final week of the season, and it looked pretty certain that the pennant was ours. I was kind of surprised when Sullivan suggested that we get a syndicate together of seven or eight players to throw the series to Cincinnati. As I say, I never figured the guy as a fixer, but just one who played for the percentages. The idea of taking seven or eight people in on the plot scared me. I said to Sullivan, it wouldn't work. He answered, don't be silly. It's just been pulled. It's been pulled before and it can be again. He had a persuasive manner, which he backed up with a lot of cash. He said he was willing to pay $10,000 each to all the players we brought in on the deal. Considering our skimpy salaries, $10,000 was quite a chunk, and he knew it. So this is Chick Gandil referencing that day that he spoke to Sullivan. Now, he's over here thinking, like, okay, I have to get these players together. And so they call this meeting in his room. And to my understanding, these are the main players that are there. There might have been more. There might have been more, but these are the ones that we're going to reference. So you have Chick Gandil, Eddie Cercote, Oscar Happy Felsch, Shoeless Joe Jackson, Fred McMullen, Charles Swede Reesburg, George Buck Weaver, Claude Lefty Williams. So those are the ones that we know potentially joined them at this meeting. And they talk about it.
Sorry, these are a lot of those names were the same ones you read off earlier that are getting paid more than the other players already, right?
No, they're the ones getting paid less.
Okay, I got that backwards then.
Yeah.
Cool. My bad.
Yeah. Yep. So they start talking about this and, like, you know, how to do it, the scheming, and they're kind of considering it. They're not sold. And then all of a sudden their teammate, Faber, was no longer able to pitch, and he was their star pitcher. He had gotten the flu. So even better, this straight-laced or clean socks pitcher, not going to be in the picture. So that helps, because now they're like, some of those second string people are going to be in there. So that actually leaves Eddie Cercote and Lefty Williams as the pitchers. And both of them were part of the meetings for the scandal. So on October 1st, 1919, it's game one, game day, right? So the World Series has 9 games in it. And by this time, there's already rumors. Someone's already slipped up. There's rumors among the gamblers that the World Series was fixed. Guess who started betting on Cincinnati real quick? Literally all the gamblers, right? Guess who else caught wind of this scandal?
The owner.
I'm sure he did, but I'm going with all the reporters. Oh. So you have all these reporters, sports reporters that are like, we heard about the scandal, and they are watching these games so closely because they want to know, are they throwing the game? So Eddie, one of the pitchers, he starts this game and he throws a strike with his first pitch in the series. So he's doing great so far. Then his second pitch would strike the Cincinnati leadoff hitter, Maury Rath, in the back.
Oh.
But this was actually planned. This was like their previously agreed on signal that the fix of the game was to go through. So he just gave him the sign that, yeah, we're going to fix the World Series.
Wait, the sign was, I'm going to hit you in the back with the ball?
It's not his teammate. He doesn't care.
Yeah, but you couldn't, I guess not. Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, you couldn't think of any other sign. Like, you couldn't just reach down and tie your left shoe. You're like, no, screw that guy. I'm going to nail him.
Nail him. Well, here's the thing is, if they're hit with the ball, that's an automatic walk, right?
I guess. Yeah, I guess you're right. It just feels, I don't know. You could just scratch your nose or something.
I mean, that's what we would do. But here's the thing with that signal for me and you. You would actually just have an itch on your nose and forget that was the signal. And I'd be like, oh, she's signaling.
Yeah, that's 100% right. You're like, she's signaling. And I'm like, no, I just have allergies. Remember the shots?
We would have to do something like, take your left shoe off, sniff it, put it back on, or something really insane.
Done. I'd do
it. Done. We now know anytime if Amanda takes her left shoe off and sniffs it, I know it's on. Okay.
Yeah. The white stockings are going to lose the game.
Done. So he gives him the sign. He doesn't play great. In the fourth inning, he would actually make a terrible throw to Swede Riesberg at second base. It was very clearly intentionally. And you can bet that these sports writers, journalists, they saw it and they were like, that was kind of a fishy throw. That was kind of odd. That was strange. And so, you know, they keep playing like this. Now, Lefty Williams, he would lose three of his games, which was a series record.
Oh.
Now,
boy, they committed.
Yeah. So, you know, they're doing good losing their games. But then, unfortunately, one of the Clean Sox players, her, wins his games that he was playing in.
Come on, guys.
God. But he's not part of the scandal. he's there. So you have that going on, and then you have this other, you know, the Black Sox players that are like, we can't let this stop us. But then they kind of start having issues with the gamblers, specifically that the gamblers were not paying the promised progress payments. So basically, after each lost game, they were supposed to receive a payment. And the gamblers were claiming that all the money was let out on bets and was in, you know, in with the bookmakers. What were they supposed to do?
That's a you problem.
Yeah.
You made this deal. You right. know how gambling and throwing stuff works, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who do you think you're dealing with? You were dealing with Chick.
Chick Gandil and Lefty Williams.
Who do you think you are? Shoeless Joe? He already doesn't have shoes. What does he care?
So, okay. Here's the other thing is now the players are kind of irritated because they are throwing the World Series, right?
Yeah.
So they kind of attempt to double cross the gamblers and they start winning. So they win games 6 and 7. Rumor has it, though, before game 8, there might have been some threats of violence against the players from the gamblers.
Okay, so because you're dealing with criminals.
So they were scared back into, and it was partly because it wasn't just them being threatened. It was their loved ones, their families, their friends. And so they kind of were to a point where they're like, okay, we're back in. We're in it to win it. And
you mean lose it?
Yeah, they're in it to lose it. Now, Lefty Williams, he would give up four straight. What? Lefty Williams would give up four straight one out hits. I don't know what the hell I was saying. So he gives up four one out hits for three runs. I don't know what I was trying to say there.
Is that baseball speak?
I don't know what I was trying to say there. Let me look up what I was trying to say there. Because clearly I don't know what I was trying to say there. Hold on. Let me go back to it. Stop it. Stop it. Okay. I know exactly what source that came from too. So yeah. Gave up four straight one out hits for three runs.
That's so he threw a bunch of bad pitches. Yeah. Bad for them pitches.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he does bad things. Okay. Just not what they want him to do. And Kid Gleason, the manager of the team, he takes him out. He's like, Lefty, you're out. They do still lose game 8 on October 9th, 1919. And that also meant that they lost the World Series that day.
Now, is that where that like saying comes in? Because I'm picturing him just getting onto the field and being like, you're there! With his thumb and the wild movement.
No, because that's normally like poor conduct, I think.
Oh, okay.
Look, I don't watch sports on TV. I don't know. So the rumor is that most of the players would be paid $5,000, which is $88,000 today, except for Buck Weaver. He was the only one that attended the scandalous meetings, but not paid for some reason. And then Chick Gandil reportedly took $35,000.
Oh.
Reportedly. That's just what the reports say. Even, like, infielder Frank McMullen, who didn't play a lot, he got paid. He literally barely played in the series. But what happened with him is he caught wind of the rumors of the fix, and he demanded to be paid for his silence.
Smart guy.
Yeah. So, you know, they lose. There's already rumors of the fix of the World Series, and they continue playing in 1920. But now they're just facing these rumors of the fix, the stories of corruptions, and it's causing issues with them, causing issues with other sports teams or baseball teams as well. It was so bad that in September 1920, a grand jury was convened to begin an investigation. And it actually didn't take long because Eddie Cercote confessed to his participation on September 28th, 1920.
Eddie, so Eddie's like,
yeah, we totally fixed that.
Eddie.
And then, yeah. And then seven of the White Sox players were then suspended. They were suspended even though they were in a tie for the 1920 World Series with the Indians. Ooh, they just needed to win. Yeah, they just needed to win all three of their remaining games and hope that Cleveland had a bad day when they played. That did not matter to Charles Comiskey because he would still have all seven players suspended. Now, one of those players was not Chick Gandil because Chick Gandil, he didn't return for the 1920 season.
He was like, see ya.
He was out of there. He was like, 1920 season who? I'm out of here.
Wouldn't want to be ya.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got Leo having the greatest time of his life right now. So he's like, bye. So now this grand jury, they have a confession. They actually get a couple of confessions. And they would issue their decision on October 22nd, 1920. So in total, eight players and five gamblers were implicated in the scandal. And there were indictments that included nine counts of conspiracy to defraud. So now that there's an indictment, they're going to trial. And it was supposed to start June 27th, 1921. However, the judge, Hugo Friend, would delay because two of the defendants were ill, Ben Franklin and Carl Zork, who were not part of the Black Sox. Ben Franklin and Carl Zork, they were defendants that were ill. Then right fielder Shano Collins was named as the wronged party in the indictments, and he accused the corrupt teammates of having cost him $1,784 as a result of the scandal, because had they won, they would have got that money for everyone, including the Clean Sox players.
Okay.
Then, just before trial, some key evidence goes missing from the courthouse. That included the signed confessions. They just go missing. And, I mean, granted, some of these confessions, actually these confessions from Eddie and Jehakons, I don't know who that is.
I
did not spell check, apparently. I don't know who that one is. Let me double check.
How does it just disappear?
It just disappeared.
From the courthouse, you said?
From the courthouse.
So yeah. Not even the police department.
Yeah. So Eddie's and Joe Jackson's, their confessions disappear from the courthouse. They're just gone. But don't worry. I mean, those two did recant their statements anyways, but don't worry. Years later, they found the confessions in the hands of Comiskey's lawyers.
Okay. First of all, horrible lawyer. Not because you somehow ended up with those papers, but you're a horrible lawyer because years later, you still had them.
Here's the thing, is Comiskey was kind of described, yes, he suspended those players, but he kind of was described as having defended them in the beginning. Like, regardless of what happened and the proof they had, he kind of defended them and was kind of siding with them. But then I think it was more, from my perspective, he had an image to maintain and he had to do something.
Okay.
So.
But I still maintain, if you had the papers, why did they find them years later? Get rid of them.
Oh.
Burn them.
Lawyers were like, look what we found.
Look now, at this.
Here's the thing, though, is even though those reappeared, it wouldn't have done anything because on July 1st, So it wouldn't have done anything. We'll talk about why. On July 1st, the prosecution announced that one of the players, William Sleepy Bill Burns, had turned state's evidence and would testify. So basically, he admit guilt and was testifying to the prosecution. So they start jury selection on July 11th. And the White Sox team would actually go to the courthouse.
Bless you. Bless you.
Thank you. So the White Sox team actually goes to the courthouse. And how it was described is that they sat and joked with their ex-teammates. Like, someone even was said to have tickled Weaver at one point because Weaver was very ticklish. Like, they're having a grand old time at the courthouse.
Okay, love that. First of all, normalize men tickling other men. Love it.
So, I mean, that's kind of a distraction. And jury selection ends up taking days. Like, they don't complete jury selection until July 15th. And it started on July 11th. So, you know.
So it took
over five days. No, July 11th, July 15th. That's 4 days.
Oh, I work at a bank. I'm great at math.
Great. Yeah. Great at math. So testimony begins on July 18th. And you have the prosecutor, Charles Gorman. He starts and he presents his evidence. The New York Times would actually write this in reference to the courthouse that day. Quote, the spectators added to the bleacher appearance in the courtroom. For most of them sweltered in shirt sleeves. Shirt sleeves and collars were few. Scores of small boys jammed their way into the seats. And as Mr. Gorman told of the alleged sellout, they repeatedly looked at each other in awe, remarking under their breaths, what do you think of that? Or, well, I'll be damned. So, trial, they get so heated, like Comiskey, he's on stand. He gets so agitated that he like stands up and he points, he stands up from the witness chair and he shakes his fist at the defendant's counsel, Ben Short. Like, he is getting heated in this. And they only just get more explosive as they go through. On July 19th, Burns admit that a member of the team intentionally fixed the World Series. But during that time, Burns mentioned, and Burns is the one that flipped to the prosecution, right? Okay. He mentions, he's like, yeah, this is what happened. But during that time, he also mentions Arnold Rothstein. There's others he mentions. I just don't care about them. He specifically mentions Arnold Rothstein. So now mobsters and organized crime has just been mentioned. And they probably don't love that. I don't think they love going to the courthouse.
I would imagine that's their least favorite place to be.
Right. Now, Arnold Rothstein, he's called to testify, and he would tell them he was just an innocent businessman just trying to clear his name and reputation. This is what was stated. The whole thing started with Abe Attell and some other cheap gamblers decided to frame the series and make a killing. The world knows I was asked in on the deal, and my friends know how I turned it down flat. I don't doubt that Attell used my name to put it over. That's been done by smarter men than Abe. But I was not in on it. Would not have gone into it under any circumstances, and did not bet a cent on the series after I found out what was underway.
Well, I never. Not
I
me.
I know he used my name, but I would never.
Not a cent.
Most people believe he probably was in on it. Like, there's enough to say he was probably in on it. He was good friends with Abe Attell, all that fun stuff, but there's nothing to prove it. There's not even anything to prove that he bet on it. I'm sure he bet on it, but under a different name.
Yeah.
So, anyways,
that as well.
Yeah. Anyways, so Burns, he's like, yeah, even Eddie, he threatened to throw the ball out of the park if he needed to, just to ensure a loss. Like, he's just telling everyone all the secrets. Like, damn, dude, it's a secret.
Calm down. Secret. Yeah. Okay, you know what? He was not invited to any more outing after this.
He was not.
Talk about Black Sox. He was Black Sox.
Yes, exactly. So the defense, they rest their case finally on July 28th, and the jury deliberates for less than 3 hours. Would you like to guess what the verdict for the players was?
Not guilty?
All of the accused players were found not guilty. They were acquitted.
They had no evidence, right?
They had nothing. Those confessions disappeared. But they reappeared years later when they could not be retried.
All they had was the squealing of
Burns.
Yes, thank you, Burns.
Uh-huh.
All they had was the squealing of Mr. Burn Bridges.
Yeah. So, you know. They're acquitted. They're partying. They're all excited because they're like, sweet, we can go back to what we were doing. Because of the scandal, the baseball commission, everything, there's a lot of changes. The scandal really hurt the baseball commission's reputation, and the owners of these teams were like, we've got to fix it. And so they reformed the commission, and they want to appoint a 3-man commission, and they want to appoint 3 men that are not connected to baseball at all. They don't want these to be players, owners, coaches, nothing. They want these just to be like fans. They're people that are going to be high ranking of some sort and people that are going to be able to help them, like, just turn around their reputation.
I'm excited to hear about how they chose these 3 random people not at all connected to baseball.
So they wanted 3 men. And they wanted the head of these 3 men to be federal judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis. Kennesaw Mountain Landis said, no way. If you want me, you want only me.
Oh. Power move there. Power play.
He said he would only accept if he was the game's sole commissioner. And he was going to get a lot of power, a lot of unchecked power over the sport. The owners of the teams agree. He becomes the sole commissioner, and he is given free reign to help clean up baseball's image.
They made him president of the baseball?
The commissioner. Sole commissioner.
It sounds like dictator of the baseball. Like, did they think this through?
No.
Oh, boy. How does
I mean, they did.
Out?
They did. Because one of his first acts was to ban the 8 players that conspired to throw the World Series.
Ooh. Oh, no. So, but there's no proof that they did.
It doesn't matter because it's not a court of law. Right? He's like, it doesn't matter. I now get to make decisions if you play for a sport. You were accused of unsportsmanlike conduct to a point that you were willing to throw a game when you should be playing your hardest. And so he essentially is like, absolutely not. And I have a quote from him. So he says, you guys are no longer allowed to play. And now keep in mind, he has no control over semi-pro barnstorming teams. So they're able to still play semi-pro. They're just not able to play essentially in major league. And this is what he stated on August 3rd, 1921. Regardless of the verdict of juries, no player who throws a ball game, no player who undertakes or promises to throw a ball game, no player who sits in confidence with a bunch of crooked ball players and gamblers where the ways and means of throwing a game are discussed and does not promptly tell the club about it will ever play professional baseball. Like, he's putting his foot down.
You said this guy was a judge, right?
He was a federal judge, yeah.
So he knows the law.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just went to baseball and made his own.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like, you know what? If they were found guilty, if this investigation found them guilty, I would be like, okay, ban them. I disagree with him. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, he went in, he makes his own laws, baseball laws. He bans eight players.
I don't like it. If they would have been found guilty, I'm all for it. Cool, okay. But they were found innocent, baseball man.
He does more than that because these players, they go on saying, okay, we're going to do this, what was it called, barnstorming team. Mm-hmm. And he's like, these players are like, we're going to do like a barnstorming. And basically, they kind of invited other teams, players to come play. And he said, no, if you guys play, you're all banned. If you guys basically mingle with these Black Sox players, you're banned. You're SOL. You're shit out of luck.
So anybody that played with the 8 banned people were also banned.
if they tried to play after they were banned. So okay. It's like after these eight players were banned, if someone that was not banned tried to play with the banned players, then they're banned too.
Okay, people can have friends.
But the barnstorming is, that they can be paid for that. So it's like, no, you're not going to go do this, play these games with them. Absolutely not. So now those eight that I mentioned earlier were all banned. So those eight include Chick Gandil, Eddie Sicote, Oscar Happy Felsch, Shoeless Joe Jackson, Fred McMullen, Charles Sweet Reesburg, George Buckweaver, and Claude Lefty Williams. Now, there's two more that were banned. There's Hal Chase was another player that was banned. He wasn't playing Major League Baseball in 1919. He was believed, however, to be the go-between between Chick and the Gamblers. So he was a professional baseball player, was not playing in 1919. He's banned anyway. They're like, I don't care about you. You're not coming back.
That guy's like, I don't even go here. And he's like, well, you're not going to go here anymore.
Exactly. And then you have Joe Gideon. He was a friend of Reesburg's, and he had learned of the fix, and he placed bets on Cincinnati. He was a player. He played for the Browns. He's banned too because he knew about it.
Wow, this guy wasn't even playing baseball, and he was just
He was.
Not that game. My bad. He wasn't even playing in that game.
But he bet on it. He knew about the fix. He bet on it. He got banned.
How did they even know? Like, how did they prove
I just assume he got busted. Okay. You want to know what really sucks, though?
What?
Shoeless Joe Jackson. He was one of the banned players. He might not have even been involved. He did play worse in the World Series, but that might not have been intentional. A lot of people say, you know, if your team's playing worse, sometimes you play worse.
Morale.
In fact, years later, some of the implicated players would say that Jackson was never present in all of their meetings. They only mentioned Jackson in hopes of giving them more credibility with the Gamblers.
Okay, dickheads. Why would you take him down with you like that? Like, at no point of the court case or anything were you just like, you know what? Yeah. Or Mr. Commissioner Banhammer Man.
But they're trying to prove their innocence during the trial, right? They don't want to say Joe wasn't involved. That shows that there's something going on. They're at this point just like, no, there was no fix of the World Series. It was
easy. Okay, but even after that, then.
Most people believe he was still a part of it somehow because he was paid out, according to sources. He received some sort of payment for the fix.
Maybe they just wanted to buy him some shoes.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. But after everything was said and done, Charles Comiskey, while he was a penny pincher, he would actually give 10 players and the manager, Kid Gleason, $1,500. And this was the amount equaling the difference between the winners and losers share for participation in the 1919 series.
Okay. Well, that's kind of cool of him because he could have just pocketed it, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was at least very nice of him. Everyone else, they went on to either play semi-pro, find different careers. Not everyone else. The 10 band players were just kind of, they had to go live their lives a different way. They essentially got away with it. And that is the Black Sox scandal.
I don't know how to feel about that. Because at first I was like, hell yeah, go do your thing. And then they all got banned. And I'm like, okay, well, that sucks. Mm-hmm. I hate it.
Yeah.
I've always heard like this referenced, but I've never looked into it at all.
And there are a lot of details that I cut out because this was just this scandal alone. I'm at 9 pages.
Oh.
And I could have gotten probably 15 easy.
Holy crap.
So, but there you have it. I just really wanted to do Arnold Rothstein and this together. So
I'm glad you did, because now, like, when people talk about this, I can be like, oh, I know that's not going to happen. I can be like, I'm going to listen and not talk, but I know you're going to be like,
I heard that those players were acquitted.
That's exactly what I'm going to be like.
Yeah. And you're going to say it very snotty, like those players were acquitted.
That was unproven. That's alleged, actually.
Allegedly, and they were not proven guilty. So
they were found innocent in a court of law. Even better, they were found acquitted in a court. No, you're not found acquitted. They were acquitted in a court of law.
And then that was not fair for them to be banned from baseball.
Correct. Still, I'll put my, I don't know, hand on that. I'll put my
hand on a Bible. I don't know.
Yes. I'll put my hand on a White Sox jersey and say.
With some coal on my hand, so it becomes a Black Sox jersey.
That was baloney.
That was unlaundered nonsense.
Oh, I enjoyed that, though.
I did too. Like, I could have gone so much deeper, and I did so much reading on it. I was like, oh my god, I don't know what to put in and what not to put in. Like, there's books about it. There's a lot.
Oh, I have to talk now, don't I?
Oh yeah. Hey, by the way, you have a story, too.
I do. I was really kind of got sucked into that. Okay. I have a story.
Oh.
Okay. Since we're shellfish, I wanted to do something special for the Podfather today. So this story is dedicated to him.
If it's not leprechauns of some sort, he probably doesn't want to hear it.
It's not a leprechaun, but I do beg to differ.
Okay.
Okay. So this is Zigu, the purple lady, and she is a Chinese goddess. Her name can be loosely translated to mean Lady of the Latrine, sometimes Third Daughter of the Latrine. She is one of the house goddesses in ancient Chinese folklore. She is the toilet goddess.
Dad, this is dedicated to you.
So, stories of Zigu dates back to the Ming Dynasty. This is 1368 to 1644. And this is during this time, people would celebrate Zigu. They would obviously start by cleaning the outhouses. Sorry, I started to laugh. They would start by cleaning the outhouses, and then they would perform a ritual. So they would make a host for Zigu, and they would make this host out of straw or hay. They would build this figure. They would dress this straw figure in skirts. They would put paper faces on it. People would pray to Zigu. They would bring offerings. They would sing and dance to drums. And eventually, this straw figure would come alive. And she would answer their questions. And people would ask her all sorts of things. So they would ask how their farm was going to, or what and how their farm would yield in the coming harvest. They would ask if their silkworms were healthy. They would ask about what kind of weather they could expect in the coming year. And to answer, she would write on a bed of dust, sometimes rice.
Using I was expecting to say she would write on a roll of toilet paper.
Well, this is, I don't even know if they had toilet paper back then.
I know. The
1300s. Wow, that's wild to say. So she would write, not on toilet paper, but on like a bed of dust or rice. And she would write using a chopstick attached to a dustpan. So you would ask her something and she would write in this dust. And the people would read and kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Interpret.
Yes, thank you. That's it. Oh my God. I need you all the time. Every time I try to say words, they would read this and interpret it kind of like you would tarot cards or like tea leaves or something like that. So legend goes that Zigu, she was born in the Tang Dynasty, and this was years 618 to years 907. Her name was He Mei, and she was living in what is now Shandong Province. He Mei was beautiful, she was well-read, and she was happily married, but she caught the eye of a prefectorial official named Li Jing. And Li Jing...
Why does that sound like you're about to start like a jingle? Like jingle bells, but Li Jing Jing, Li Jing Jing.
Li Jing killed her husband.
Oh, okay, good on you, girl.
She caught his eye and he was like, I need her. So he had her husband killed and then forced He Mei to become his concubine. And as if that wasn't bad enough, Li Jing's wife was incredibly jealous of He Mei. And she eventually killed her in the outhouse on the 15th night of the first moon. And it said that whenever Li Jing would go to the bathroom after this, he would hear a woman yelling and crying. That could also be the podfather asking for help.
Release me from this outhouse!
Sometimes he would hear soldiers yelling.
That's also my dad screaming for help. Either that or that's my mom coming to save him. I don't know which one.
Yeah, that it's probably your mom being like, oh my God, I'm coming. Stop beating on the door. It's not going to move.
Oh, you already know that.
Even after she died, though, He Mei never complained about her life. She never complained about what happened to her. And so the gods took pity on her. And they saw her fate, and to right the wrongs that she had suffered, she was given a job serving the human realm. Another legend. This is found in a book called A Garden's... This is found in a book called A Garden of Marvel. This is a book of... I want this. A Garden of Marvels was described as a book of supernatural stories written in the Song era, which is years 420 to 479, of Northern and Southern dynasties. I need this book. Supernatural, like old supernatural Chinese story. I got it.
Done. We got to get it for you.
So since this story of Zigu was published in this book, though, that means that Zigu couldn't have been born during the Tang Dynasty because this happens well before then. But in this story, Zigu, she either doesn't have a specific identity or it wasn't mentioned, but she marries a man who does have a name, Zigu marries a man named Zushu, and Zushu's wife in this version was Lady Tao. And again, Lady Tao is jealous of Zigu, so she forced her to do the dirtiest chores, the absolute worst ones, like cleaning the outhouse. And in this story, Zigu wasn't murdered, but she died of anger. Which
can that happen?
Maybe. I mean, I have been that angry cleaning before. Well, I guess I haven't because I'm still alive. I've been pretty angry cleaning before, but I kind of get it.
It was that sushi rice. That's how angry you got.
Oh my God. I just had a flashback. I'm so, my heart rate. Hold on.
That's what it is. It raises your heart rate. I got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hold on. I got to document this. I got to tell my doctor. No.
Time out. I figured this out. My heart rate, my blood pressure spiked.
I know exactly what it is. My blood pressure spiked. when I have to clean up sushi rice and flour after my daughter, and then it just goes straight to my colon.
And the C. diff.
This version also claims, now, this is where I really need Podfather to pay attention. This version of the story.
Hold on. He's probably turned it off already and been like, screw you.
No, well, look, I'm trying to help. This may help him in the future.
Okay, Dad.
This story claims that if Zigu is particularly displeased, you can calm her down by saying, Zushu is not here and Lady Tao has gone home. The little maiden can come out. And then I guess your outhouse stops
being
revolting. Like, yeah, I don't know. Once you say that, the washing machine just moves right back to where it's supposed to be and the door opens and you can go about your... The final belief, at least that I found... oh, God. Okay. The final and most brutal belief is the story of Lady Chi. And there is a lot of historical evidence to this story to say that it actually happened. And then there's also that caveat that this has also said to have been very hyperbolized. So, you know, grain of salt. So the Lady Chi was the cherished concubine of Emperor Liu Bang and Empress consort Lu Zhu hated Lady Chi. Both women had a son by the emperor, and Lady Chi's son, even though she was not the empress, you know, so her son wasn't as, like, hierarchy-wise, it wasn't the crown prince. That's what I'm trying to say. Lord have mercy. Help me, guys. Lady Chi's son was said to be favored by the emperor. It's rumored that Lady Chi tried to persuade the king to name her son crown prince instead of Empress Lu's son. It was also said that the king didn't feel the crown prince was suitable for the throne. So he was potentially kind of leaning towards making Lady Chi's son the crown prince. But that never happened. Empress Lu, she did everything in her power to not let that happen. And regardless of all this, you know, drama, when the king passed, the now Empress Dowager Lu Zhu's son became emperor, the crown prince. When this happened, she took a leadership role in his administration, and Lady Chi's son became king elsewhere. Within the year that the emperor passed, Emperor Hui, he assumed the throne, and Empress Dowager Lu launched an attack on Lady Chi and her son. She had Lady Chi arrested. She was dressed in like the standard prison clothes. Her head was shaved. She was put in stocks and she was forced to do hard labor. And then she summoned Lady Chi's son to the palace. And the story goes that the current emperor tried to protect his stepbrother, who would have been around 12 years old. And he kept his stepbrother by his side all the time. Anything he ate or drank, he had it tested to make sure it wasn't poisoned. And one morning, the emperor would wake up to go hunting, and his stepbrother, the king, wouldn't get out of bed. I mean, he's a 12-year-old king. I wouldn't get up early if I didn't have to either. Jesus.
He is dreaming of the days of Nintendo and PlayStation and his Game Boy, but like
thousands of years later. Yeah. Like hoop and stick and marbles, yeah. I think.
Something like that. He doesn't want to go to king. He doesn't want to go work.
Yeah, no. Shoot animals? That sounds really like a lot of work. Gross. I don't know. Maybe not. Like, I don't know. Regardless, he did not wake up, and the emperor let him sleep and went hunting, because at this point, he was thinking that his mother had given up because it had been months at this point and nothing happened at all. Well, the Empress Dowager Lu did not give up, and she took this opportunity to send an assassin to force venom down the king's throat, successfully killing him before her son returned.
He's 12.
Yeah. After this, she turned her wrath to Lady Qi, because imprisoning her wasn't enough. So, she had her arms and legs chopped off, her eyes gouged out.
I'm
traumatized. This is brutal.
That's why your handwriting is the way it is.
Yes, that's why I have... Brittany called me out. Sent me a screenshot or sent me something about how, what's it called?
I don't remember now.
Oh no.
Print script.
I think. Yeah. About how print script is indicative of trauma and very commonly seen in serial killers. Look. I'm just trying to stay alive myself, okay? I can't worry about other people not being... I don't know where I was going with that, okay? I'm trying to stay alive.
Yeah, you're trying to stay alive. She doesn't care about anyone else.
That's where I was going, but I wasn't trying to drive there. That's just where the road was leading me, so I had to stop. There.
You happily sprinted there.
I hate it here.
You love it.
Okay, so, yes, she turned her wrath to Lady Qi. She had her limbs cupped off, her eyes gouged out, her tongue cut out. She had her nose and ears cut off. She was forced to drink a potion that made her mute and more toxins to make her dumb. And I took this to mean, like, cognitively impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And then she locked Lady Qi in a pigsty and called her human swine.
Is that how you felt, Dad, when you were locked in your bathroom?
Did you just feel like human swine?
Yeah, genuinely curious.
Mm-hmm. Lady Qi would eventually die, but not before the current emperor saw her, recognized her, and he was so shocked by his mother's cruelty that he got sick for a year. After this, he completely lost interest in state affairs and virtually relinquished his title, which allowed his mother to step in. And she went on to become the first female ruler of United China. So she was, from what it sounded like, kind of a badass, but also, like, I'm scared of her.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever her story may have been, it's believed that Zigu's lowly beginnings made her popular and relatable to commoners and women who suffered in patriarchal feudal societies were the main practitioners of the Zigu ritual. So, women suffering at the hands of men and commoners, we love Zigu. I love Zigu. I kind of want a tattoo on my arm, but I can't find a picture of her. I mean, she's a toilet goddess. What better tattoo is there for?
There's better for you, honestly.
I have to find
you and picture. My dad should get matching toilet goddess tattoos.
Can we?
Dad? Podfather? She's pretty awesome.
I absolutely. People Ooh, you know also what? See what?
I'll ask my cousin if she, because she's pretty artsy fartsy. I'll ask her if she can design you a toilet goddess tattoo to match with my dad.
Yes, please.
Because I'm the just only picture for a toilet goddess tattoo and no additional background information.
And purple. That's it. That's all I need. Yeah. Purple. Well, and like that's another thing. Purple's my favorite color. So, huh?
You just tell the tattoo artist that one.
Yeah. Make it purple, make it toilet, good to go. Oh, awesome. Okay. People also see the toilet goddess as a connection between life and death. And some Chinese scholars claim that feces signifies death and decay. And it also signifies reincarnation because plants flourish.
Either way is fine. I think either way is fine. It's a regional dialect type thing.
Yeah, I don't remember how we say it. And that always confuses me because I watched a lot of YouTubes. Because plants flourish when nourished with fertilizers made from like dung and other rotten matter. Some stories of Zigu claim that she uses feces in her blessings. One specific story tells of the toilet goddess dressed in yellow, and she dabs feces behind a man's right ear, and this gives him the ability to understand ants, and these ants go on to tell him where treasure is buried and where he needs to dig to find it. Which, that sounds awesome, but also, that's how you get C. diff. So.
No, that's how you get C. diff.
No, I got it from clindamycin.
And poop.
Probably. I think that's how it works, yeah. Other stories paint her as a girl's girl. There is a story of a vagrant by the name of Li Qi. Li Qi is married, but while he's traveling, he starts flirting with a local woman. And then he disappears. His friends do eventually find him. And when they find Li Qi, he is hugging a toilet, smiling eerily, ear to ear, just staring into the bowl.
That's so weird.
And unhygienic.
Did he clean it first? Was it a public toilet?
It was an outhouse.
Gross.
Lee's friends, they try to save him, and Li Qi is like, no, I'm staying here, smiling at this toilet. He refuses to leave. So they leave, and later they go back, and they find him dead, still hugging the toilet with his head inside the bowl. That, sir, is how you get C. diff.
He wanted C. diff.
It turns out that the woman that he was flirting with was Zigu, the toilet goddess. And the story claims that she punishes men susceptible to her seduction. I'm just saying, if James goes away on his work trip and flirts with another woman, and they find his head in a toilet bowl.
Girl's girl.
He had it coming.
Look, for some reason I'm thinking like single men, that's not fair for them. Him, okay, that's fine. Because he was married or whatever. I'm thinking like, what if it was a single man? And this pretty lady is flirting with him.
Get it, girl. Or boy.
Get it, and person. She's going to punish them?
No.
Oh, only married men.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like, what about the single men? That's really rude.
Oh, no. I don't think she bothers them. I don't think she really cares about men. I think she's had enough of them, actually. She's just looking out for us.
You hear that, Leo? She's just looking out for Mama.
But that's the story of Zigu, the toilet goddess.
Dad, what did you do to piss her off?
Yeah. Let us know. Did you not clean the outhouse?
Ooh.
Was it not to her desire?
Uh-oh, did you?
Did you not? You know what? I bet he forgot to make a straw person dress it up and dance around it to drum.
Probably.
Yeah.
Dad, I would love to see you make that straw person and dance around it, all that fun stuff. You know what? I'll be up there soon, Friday. You can do it on Friday.
Okay. Well, if you don't send me pictures, we're not friends anymore.
I'm just sending you an entire damn Snapchat.
Hell yeah.
The second I convince him to do it.
Which is probably never.
You know what? When he's old and senile, which he's probably getting there, I mm-hmm. might be able to convince him. Because he's going to have memories of this, of us and the bullshit, and he's going to be like, yeah, that was real. And I'm going to say, yeah, Dad, you used to dance around the straw all the time.
You heard that on a radio show, or no, you heard that on the news. You used to do that all the time.
Every single day of your life. Yeah. Why don't you do it now?
Yeah. They said it was good for your colon to do that, actually.
They actually said it was really good for family bonding. As long as you were the only one that danced.
I'll play the music on my phone. I got the drums right here.
You got the drums. You got the dancing. Oh, that was a good one. I like that one. Sorry, Dad. Sucks to be you.
thanks for the inspiration.
Yeah, thanks for the inspo. Thank you all for listening to Helen Hills Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram at Helen Hills Podcast, at Helen Hills Pod, or Facebook by searching Helen Hills Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Helen Hills Podcast. If you want to if you want to support us, please like, review, share, rate, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create additional content for you, you can donate through Patreon, where we're working to release our specials. Patrons, if you have your own true crime or paranormal stories, suggestions, or words of encouragement, please email us at helenhillspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen as well. Bye.
Bye.